Thank you. It's always good to be here. And brings back all the wonderful memories I have of this place, and from sitting right over there on a folding chair one Wednesday night when Dick Gibson led songs the first time we met in this building, to one of the latter ones was carrying my youngest son out the back door, in which he was said loud enough for everybody to hear, "Are you going to spank me, Dad?" So it was a good strategy on his part. Anyway, this last time, I have talked here a couple of times before. Last time I talked here, I covered a section out of Ephesians 2, 19 to 22 that was read. And it talked about how we are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens and saints, the members of the household of God. And then it paints a great picture of both the church and our individual lives on how we should build it. And it says, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ being the chief cornerstone. Can't you picture that solid building that we build our lives around? Christ is the cornerstone. Laid around is the teachings of the apostles and the prophets. And we know that's true, and we know that's not going to move. And all we have to do is build on that, and we'll be strong. So our foundation and our basic structure in our lives is so critical that we have to protect it. Because in 1 Peter 5 and 8, it tells us to be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Now, we'll get started here by taking you back to September 11th on 2001, a day that we can all remember. And I remember the first time that somebody came in and said, "You got to turn the TV on." And here I saw the World Trade Center, and I saw this line across it. And they said a commercial plane, had flown into that and hit the tower. And I was going, you know, the tragedy was already there. Everybody on the plane obviously died. Everybody on those floors obviously died. But this building was just standing there, and it was on fire. So, well, we got to get that fire put out. But that's pretty amazing, you know, it's standing there. Because that later calculations show that plane hit the building with about 40 million joules of energy. The building rocked about 2 feet over and then went back up again and still stood there. But the building didn't stay up there, because the building was, that airplane delivered a payload of fuel that sat there and started burning that was tens of thousands of times more powerful than the impact. And it got to the structure of that building, and then the building collapsed. Not because of the impact, but because of what it carried inside with it at that time. Got another example of a foundation problem. That's the house that I live in currently. It's been there 40-some years. I've lived there about 22 years of it. And before I got there, there was some water. It had been gradually leaking down the walls, the foundation. They hadn't kept the dirt built up good. Well, we've added some dirt and tried to keep things together, but a few years ago that one side of the house decided to drop about an inch. And houses don't take well to that, sheetrock especially. And that foundation gave way and had to be repaired. Well, they had to do a lot of digging and a lot of jacking things up and putting concrete under the concrete that was there, and we're back to minimal cracking again. So I'm hoping it'll last another 20, 30 years and the most, and then whatever happens, happens. But it was a long, gradual process for that foundation to give way. And that's a couple of different ways our foundations can be attacked. Sometimes we can let something in, maybe, that we think we can handle, and there's really a lot more to it than we thought, or sometimes our foundation, and I'm talking about our foundation spiritually to make these parallels, can be taken out from under us. But that foundation is so important to our lives, and the devil's going to take the way that he thinks that's going to get to us the most. Our faith is so important, and that's what determines where we build our foundation in our lives, our faith in God. And what can get to us? Well, I'm going to cover some things. We're going to look at some examples because the Bible gives us lots of examples, doesn't they, of people that had problems, had shortcomings, that their faith left them, what happened to them, and then how they built it back up. We're going to go through a few of those. And as we do that, I want you to think in your own lives, what is it that's eating away at your foundation? What's your weakness? What is the issue that you need to put a stop to so that there isn't any permanent longer-term damage? We're going to talk about a few, and they interact with each other many times. Fear, worry, doubt, and greed. Fear, worry, doubt, they interact a lot with each other. And then greed. So, how can fear affect us in this world today? Well, personally, we can fear personal harm. I think a lot of times as we get older, I'm within a year of my Medicare card now, we start getting maybe afraid of interacting with the world somewhat more. And I saw that in my parents as they got older. Fear of something happening to them physically. If you're more of the teen kind of years, maybe a fear of being a social outcast and not having friends and being a part of the crowd. A fear of our health is a concern, especially as we get older. A loss of a job, our finances, all these things can throw some fear at us. And if we look away from where we should be looking, they can definitely affect our lives. I'll read some verses here. You may not be able to keep up with that if you just listen to some of these. It'll bring up some memories, and you'll know just where I'm at. Matthew 8:23. Jesus slept as a furious storm came up, and the disciples woke Jesus and asked him to save them. And Jesus said, "Ye of little faith, why are you afraid?" They were with Jesus Christ. They'd seen what he'd done. But they must have had some doubts when they looked around and saw the ocean. And, well, not the ocean, the sea, and what it was doing. They just saw, that's something I should be afraid of. Matthew 14:29, Jesus walked on the water. "It's a ghost," they said. Jesus said, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Then Peter went out to Jesus. He had the faith. He walked on the water, but when he sank, Jesus said to him, "Ye of little faith, why did you doubt?" Their faith comes and goes, doesn't it? Our doubt comes and goes at times. Now, we will. I'll label this next one the ultimate underachiever, not to degrade him at all. But if we look at the story of Gideon in Judges, the 6th chapter, we can see what happens to somebody when fear takes them over, and what you can do based on what your capabilities are. We all have certain capabilities in this life. Gideon had a bunch, but where was he? And Judges 6:13 reads, O my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? They've been under the Midianites' captivity for 7 years now. And where are all his miracles, which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? That now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. So where was Gideon at the start of the story? He was at a hidden site threshing grain. I'll just give an overview of this as you can remember the story. And then the angel came to him and said, you are a mighty man and brave, and you will deliver Israel from the Midianites. And he goes, well, I'm the weakest of my father's brood here, and how can I possibly do something like this? You must have the wrong person. But they gave him the courage to go out and tear down the altar to Baal that night, and then that went well. And then so they put out a call for the troops, and they came. But again, his faith began to waver. I don't know if I can handle this. Well, then he asked God with the fleece. Was the fleece wet once, and then the fleece was dry once? He goes, okay, I'm ready to go now. And God said, well, you got 32,000 men. That's too many. He goes, well, too many. So God says, no, send the ones home that don't want to fight. Goes down to 10,000. That's too many. But he looks at all the Midianites just packed over nearby in the camp, and he goes, you know, I can't do that. So God sees his potential and keeps building him up and taking him through this. Now they do the test with the water and how they drink, and they're down to 300 men. And now he goes, okay, I'm afraid again. I don't think I can do this. So then God sends him over into the camp of the Midianites, where he listens to them and the visions they're seeing. Okay, then he goes, oh, well, yeah, these people are scared. They're scared of us. And he comes back with the confidence, and with 300 men, he defeats them and runs them off with the trumpets and the torches. And this is the story goes. So there's someone that had a lot of potential, but he was afraid. And he needed his faith to increase. He needed more confidence in what he was doing in order to pull off this victory that God knew that he could do. Are we underperforming for what God would have us to do? Another thing is worry. We can be afraid of what life brings us, and that kind of goes with doubt somewhat, but the Bible specifically addresses worrying. This in the Philippians 4, 6, and 7, be anxious for nothing but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. Let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Don't be anxious. God has told us that we will be cared for. In Matthew 6, 25, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is life not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Many people go through some very trying times with their jobs and financially during their life. They need to keep looking towards God and his promises to us. How about doubt? Did God really do what he said he did? You think he did all of that? Well, there was a lot of doubt, even with the men that lived daily with Jesus. After the women visited the tomb and they found Jesus had risen and returned back and told the others, and their words seemed like idle tales, and they did not believe. Their words seemed like idle tales, and they didn't believe them. But Peter, he'd just gone through a little aligning process, hadn't he, with his denial of Jesus and his being caught in that. That woke him up a little bit, you can tell, because Peter rose and ran to the tomb, and stooping down, he saw the linen clothes lying by themselves and departed, marveling to himself at what had happened. But everybody else said, no, that couldn't be. And even after most of the apostles had seen Jesus and still told Thomas about it, who wasn't there, Thomas said this. He said, unless I see his hands and the print of the nails and put my finger into the print of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. So we're not alone in times that our faith may waver or our doubt may creep into our lives. We're not alone, but that's no excuse. There's no excuse for what happened, but they are human, and we are too, and we have to be sure we don't fall into these traps. What about, there's another, we're having a study out in Wednesday evenings where Jeremy Morris is talking about the creation. He gave this class at one of the 2-week meetings, and he's talking about, you know, evolution and the creation and how what a, you know, ridiculous theory this is and all the holes in it. But it's causing many people doubts because about the Bible, which is truth, versus science, which I love science. I think science is great. That's mostly what I do in my life. It's just to help explain this magnificent, wonderful creation, just so we can better understand it. But taking science to the extent to try to explain how we got here is just is utter nonsense. And this class is really very good at pointing out some of these things. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is Romans 1 and 20. It says, "For since the creation of the world," and I got this one highlighted, you might want to highlight this too, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." All you really have to do, if you want to believe in God, somebody that really doesn't believe there's a God, have them look around. Without all some of this yelling in your ear about this all came from some, you know, pond scum somewhere. Look at the detail, the design. The more we learn about it, the more we find out how utterly false that is. And God put all this here for us. He didn't have to make it as elaborate as he did. I believe he put it there for us to be inspired. Let's look at greed a little bit. These other, the worry and the doubt, they kind of interact with each other. There's another one called greed, and I think we're real susceptible to that in this country. Anytime, I kind of define it as any time that man starts to think that man has more to offer than God. And we talked about that in the class this morning. As a matter of fact, I'll just jump around 1 John the second chapter here because we covered it real well. But there's many things that life throws at us that we'd rather have. And we're basically making some decisions many times that we're going to substitute that in place of God. Maybe not consciously. And that's one of these little slow drip things, I believe. In 1 John 2:16, "For all that is in," well, I'll put it in here anyway. It's in my notes. I'll just go right ahead and read it. 1 John 2:16 that we talked about. "For all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world." Adam and Eve, it started with them. It's not like it doesn't affect every single person. They had the perfect life in the perfect place. But was that good enough? No, they had to be like God, and that's how the devil tempted them. You will not surely die if you eat this, for God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. That was the lie. That was the lie. There was something else that they could have that they didn't have. That started the whole sin of man. Solomon in Ecclesiastes 2:11, "Yet all the things that he did in his life, yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun." Money can leave you, but God will not. This is a chasing after more and more in the country we live in with the abundance that we have can certainly be a temptation. Hebrews 13:5, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you." Be content with what you had. Paul was able to do that. Paul had little and Paul had a lot in different times of his life, and he learned to live with either. Can we? And we can't serve two masters. You can't serve both. Matthew 6:24, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, greed is subtle, but greed has nothing to do with what you own. Greed is not for the rich or for the poor. Greed is for all men to desire more than they have and be willing to sacrifice their foundation for it. We can, if we've been going through these things and maybe talking a little bit or thinking a little bit to ourselves how this can affect me, how this can affect our lives, that's what we need to look at and bring it down to a more personal level for us. is the foundation that we are on moving, or is the foundation that we are on solid? So if you look at the different things that can tempt people, I think I can put a few things into the categories. If you look at the problem that we're having in the country with drug and alcohol, to me that's letting something in the door and not realizing how powerful it is. That's like the World Trade Center. That's like saying this is okay and letting it through the door and then not being able to control it and letting it get totally out of hand. Drug addiction is now causing some, even people that were on the prescribed medications, is now becoming one of the biggest causes of death for people of certain age groups, and people that were normally you wouldn't think of as your typical drug user. So it's very sobering statistics that are happening right now, and it can be given to us by a doctor and started that way and then abused by the person themselves. Very, very tricky subject to deal with, but another way the devil deals in our lives. Or is it something that's slowly eating away at our structure and our foundation that we, for something we desire? You know, I've got things in my life that basically you've just got to draw lines on them. I went through a number of things. I tried to make a little list here. Things that I like personally. I like to play golf. I like boating. You know, so a couple of things that I like. And you can take those to extremes. I hope that I've drawn my lines carefully enough that doesn't interfere with my Christian life and the things I want to do. There's certainly people that get, you know, like if you get into golf a lot, there's Saturday, Sunday tournaments, and there's all kinds of things that could pull you away from God and doing the kind of things you should be doing. And there's certainly a lot of time that could be killed there if you wanted to get really good. Well, I'm not going to be joining the tour or anything. Even the seniors tour guys are too young for me anymore. So we have to put limits on these things. I like to get out on the water, on the sunsets in the evening. And but you can get caught up in the newest, fastest, biggest boat and spend the rest of your life working to try to finance that hobby. I've seen kids in their sports get totally out of hand. And that happened, that kind of was getting that way at our house at one point. And I see that a lot with young families today. So they have their kids, and it's good to play sports. And next thing you know, they're on a competitive team, and now they're going away for the weekend here. I don't know any situations here, but I'm just saying that gets out of hand. The poor parents, they spend their time sitting on bleachers all the time, and you spend a lot of time away. And is the kid going to have a professional sporting career? I don't think so. Occasionally, you could maybe get a scholarship out of it. But just know where when you start these things, when you're thinking clearly, draw the lines so that it's not taking away from the foundation that you should be sitting on and eating away at your relationship with God. Another one of the 9/11 skyscraper issues, I think, is is the TV and your internet that comes into your house. I use it regularly for getting where I'm going to get and looking up good ideas for sermons and seeing whoever's doing something on Facebook. I'm really not much of a Facebook person. I kind of post when I travel, but there's a lot of good interaction with the brothers and sisters here. I don't have friends that aren't in the church or my immediate family on it, and that's kind of my control there for that. But draw your lines, because it's so easy to get on there, and then it's so easy to get into sin quickly with both of those, TV, movies, media, and the internet. Make sure that you're not getting eroded away slowly. I just bring these these items to you this morning to consider and look inside yourself, and you can decide. But you can kind of tell if you take some time to think if these things are getting to you, and you need to say to yourself, this has gotten out of hand in my life. I need to draw the line here. I need to get things back together. And if that's where you're at this morning, then good. If you don't have the foundation that you've built on, and you haven't accepted Jesus Christ as your cornerstone of your structure, and the apostles and the prophets, and what's written in the Bible is not what you're building on, then if you're here in that situation, then we certainly invite you to come forward and be baptized. And if there's something else in your life that's gotten out of hand that you need to publicly acknowledge, I'm sure the elders will help you with that. So please come forward as we stand and sing the invitation number.